Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're diving into the world of prophets and prophecy in ancient Israel.
Ooh, that's a fascinating topic.
It is, right? And we'll be exploring it using a lecture transcript called Foundations of Prophecy. That's by Robert Vannoy.
Okay.
Have you ever, like, wondered how prophets knew they were speaking God's words and not just, like, their own thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, how do you tell the difference?
Right.
It's not always so obvious, is it?
No, not at all. In fact, that's one of the key things that Vannoy really emphasizes. The prophets themselves were very aware of the difference between their own personal opinions and what they believed to be God's message.
So it wasn't just like a feeling or intuition.
No, it wasn't just a hunch. They weren't trying to dress up their own ideas as divine revelation. It was a much deeper and more profound experience for them.
So they knew they were dealing with something bigger than themselves.
Exactly. And one of the most vivid examples of this is the story of Nathan and King David.
Oh, yeah. David, the one who wanted to build that massive temple. Right. Right. David's feeling pretty comfortable in his palace, decides he wants to build this grand temple for the Ark of the Covenant. Seems like a pretty noble idea, right?
Yeah. Honoring God with a magnificent building seems like a good plan.
And initially, Nathan the prophet, he actually agrees with David.
He does.
He does. But then God speaks to Nathan directly that night.
Oh, okay.
And God tells him that it's actually not David who's supposed to build the temple. It's going to be his son, Solomon.
Wow. So Nathan has to go back to David and say, sorry, Your Majesty, but it turns out I was wrong. God says it's not your job.
It's a pretty dramatic situation.
I can imagine. It must have taken a lot of courage to contradict the king like that.
Definitely. It really shows the dynamic between human understanding and divine revelation. You know, Nathan had to put aside his own initial agreement and deliver a message that contradicted his earlier words.
It highlights how important continuous divine guidance was for the prophets. It wasn't like a one-time download.
Absolutely. It shows they were actively engaged in a relationship with God, not just following a pre-written script.
They had to constantly discern God's will. That makes you think about the weight of responsibility they carried. To tell a king he's wrong, especially about something as monumental as building a temple.
It's a pretty big deal.
What other examples does Vannoy use to show this difference between personal opinion and God's message?
Well, there's the story of Samuel misjudging Eliab. You remember he assumed Eliab was the chosen one based on his appearance.
Yeah, but God chose David instead, right?
Exactly. God reminded Samuel that appearances can be deceiving and that it was what was on the inside that mattered. Then there's Jonah, who actually tries to run away from his mission.
Because he didn't agree with God's plan for Nineveh?
Precisely. He had his own ideas about how things should go, and God's plan clashed with his personal feelings.
So these prophets, they were human after all, with doubts and struggles.
Yeah, exactly. They had doubts, they made mistakes, they even argued with God sometimes.
Which makes their stories even more relatable, I think.
Definitely. They weren't perfect beings. They were real people wrestling with these extraordinary experiences.
And that's what makes their story so compelling even thousands of years later.
It adds a layer of depth and complexity to the whole idea of prophecy.
Absolutely. So we've talked about how prophets distinguished God's message from their own thoughts. But what about when two prophets had different predictions? How did people know who to believe?
That's where things get really tricky. Vannoy actually describes a clash between Jeremiah and a false prophet named Hananiah.
Okay.
Jeremiah was prophesying that Judah would be subject to the Babylonian king. Essentially, he was advocating for surrender to survive.
But Hananiah disagreed.
Completely. He claimed that God would break Babylon's power and that everything would be just fine.
Two very different messages.
A classic battle of Thus Saith the Lord. And it left the people caught in the middle, unsure of who to believe.
So how was the truth determined? Whose message was actually from God?
Well, that's the question, isn't it? In this instance, Jeremiah initially says that he hopes Hananiah is right.
Okay.
But then he receives a new word from God. This word directly condemns Hananiah, and it predicts that Hananiah will die within a year.
Oh, wow.
And as it turns out, Hananiah dies just 2 months later.
That's pretty definitive.
It's a powerful confirmation of Jeremiah's authority and a stark warning against false prophecy.
Definitely raises the stakes. It's not just about interpretation anymore. It's about life and death consequences.
Exactly.
But before we go too far down that road, I'm curious about the history of prophecy. Just how far back does this tradition go? Was it always part of ancient Israelite culture?
Well, Vannoy makes a really interesting point. He says the tradition of prophecy is as old as Israel itself.
Wow, really?
He even points to a verse, Jeremiah 7.25, where it says that God has been sending prophets from the time your forefathers left Egypt.
So it's a long-standing tradition, not just a sudden phenomenon.
Exactly. It was woven into the very fabric of their history.
But were there prophets before Moses and the Exodus?
That's a good question. And it seems there were. Think about Noah and Abraham.
Oh, right.
They're considered prophets, even though their stories predate the formal establishment of Israel as a nation.
So this form of divine communication has roots that stretch back even further.
It suggests that it's a seated element of human history, perhaps even something universal.
That's incredible to think about. And speaking of broadening our perspective, it wasn't just men who served as prophets, right? Weren't there also some pretty amazing prophetesses in ancient Israel?
Absolutely. We might not have as much detail about their lives,
right?
But figures like Miriam, Deborah, and Huldah, they show that women held real spiritual and political authority.
Yeah, Miriam was Moses' sister.
Right, and she specifically called a prophetess in the book of Exodus. Then you have Deborah. She wasn't just a prophetess, she was also a judge, a powerful leader who actually led Israel in battle.
And Huldah, King Josiah, consulted her when the book of the law was found in the temple.
Exactly. Her pronouncements had a major impact on his religious reforms. So these women, they weren't just passive figures, they were actively shaping the course of events.
So it challenges the idea that prophecy was just a man's domain.
Absolutely. It raises a lot of questions about the different roles that prophets could have. Were these women primarily leading worship or delivering God's message? Or maybe both?
It's like we're seeing these different pieces of a larger puzzle.
It's intriguing, isn't it?
It is. And speaking of intriguing, we know that Isaiah's wife was also called a prophetess. But her specific role is still unclear.
It's a bit of a mystery, isn't it? Makes you wonder what other stories and insights are out there waiting to be discovered, especially concerning the experiences of these women.
Absolutely. It definitely sparks a desire to dig deeper. And speaking of digging deeper, we can't ignore these companies of prophets that Vinoy mentions. What were those groups all about? Were they like ancient prophet training schools?
That's where things get really fascinating. And honestly, the Bible doesn't give us a clear answer. These groups, they're mentioned mainly in the books of Samuel and Kings. They were kind of a mystery, even to the ancient Israelites themselves.
So imagine you're walking down the road and you come across this whole band of prophets all prophesying at once. That must have been a sight to see.
We get a glimpse of this in 1 Samuel when Saul encounters a company of prophets prophesying.
Okay.
And again, when Elisha interacts with these groups in different locations, it's clear they played a role in religious life, but the specifics are open to interpretation.
So we've got these groups of prophets popping up all over the place, and nobody's quite sure what they're doing. It's like an ancient mystery cult shrouded in secrecy.
It does have a certain air of intrigue, doesn't it? And it speaks to the complexity of prophecy in ancient Israel. It wasn't just about individual prophets receiving messages. It was a whole communal aspect to it as well.
Okay, but what were some of the theories about these groups? Did they have a purpose? Or were they just prophets hanging out, you know, prophesying together?
Well, Vinoy presents a few different perspectives from scholars who have studied this. One theory by Hubert Friedman is that they were disciples or assistants to major prophets.
Like Samuel and Elisha?
Exactly. So imagine a sort of prophetic apprenticeship. These groups received instruction and training from the more experienced prophets.
It was like a school for prophets, where they could hone their skills.
It's one way to look at it. But another scholar, E.J. Young, he suggests that their main function might have been ecstatic praise and worship, maybe involving music.
Music.
Yeah. This idea is supported by descriptions in chronicles of musicians who prophesied with their instruments and by the fact that music was often associated with prophetic experiences.
That makes sense, especially when you consider the scene with Saul encountering that company of prophets. There's definitely a sense of strong emotion and spiritual energy in that encounter.
Exactly. It's almost like they were tapping into some collective spiritual power.
Right. And we see examples of Saul's men, and even Saul himself, being overcome by the Spirit and prophesying when they're sent to capture David.
Right. It's interesting, isn't it?
It is. It suggests that these experiences could be contagious, maybe even ecstatic. So music, strong emotion, maybe even trance-like behavior. Sounds intense. But did these companies actually deliver messages from God like we see with the individual prophets? Or was it more about worship and spiritual practice?
That's the big question. And it really highlights the mystery surrounding these groups. You see, there's actually only one example in the entire Bible where a member of a company of prophets delivers a clear message from God.
Only one. Okay, I have to hear this story. Which one is it?
It's found in 1 Kings 20. One of the sons of the prophets, that's the term that's often used for these groups, instructs a companion to strike him.
He asks someone to hit him.
Yeah. And when the companion refuses, the prophet predicts he'll be killed by a lion.
Wait, so he actually asks someone to hit him? That's a bit out there, even for a prophet.
It does sound strange to modern ears, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit.
But remember, the ways people experienced and expressed their connection to the divine were very different back then.
Right, right. So what happened? Did the companion actually get killed by a lion?
He did, and after that, the prophet finds someone else who's willing to strike him. And then he goes and confronts King Ahab. He delivers a judgment against the king for setting free a man who God had decided should die.
Wow. So in that one instance, a member of a company of prophets acts just like a lone prophet delivering God's message. But as you said, it's the exception, not the rule.
Exactly. Which makes the mystery even deeper, right?
Yeah. What were these groups really doing? Were they mostly focused on spiritual practices? Or were there other things going on that we just haven't considered?
It's fascinating to think about.
Okay, so let's talk about this term, sons of the prophets, for a second. Is it meant to be taken literally? Or is there a different meaning here?
That's a great point. Remember, we talked about the Hebrew word ben, which is often translated as son.
Right.
It can also indicate membership in a group.
Like when we read, Judah is a lion's whelp, it doesn't mean they're actually talking about a baby lion.
Exactly.
It means Judah is a fierce warrior, a member of that tribe.
Right. So sons of the prophets doesn't necessarily mean they're literally sons of prophets, but rather that they belong to a particular group or community.
Ah, so it's more about belonging than the bloodlines.
Precisely. It signifies membership, not necessarily lineage.
So it's more like members of the prophetic guild or something like that.
That's a good way to think about it.
But that still leaves us with a lot of questions, doesn't it?
It does.
Like, what were the criteria for joining? Were there initiation rituals, a specific training, a code of conduct?
Those are great questions. And unfortunately, we don't have a lot of details in the Bible. It's almost like these groups existed on the fringes of mainstream society. Their practices were shrouded in secrecy.
It's like trying to solve a puzzle with missing pieces.
It is. We know they existed. We have some clues about what they did, but the full picture remains elusive.
It's part of what makes studying ancient history so fascinating, isn't it?
It is. It's not always about finding definitive answers. It's about exploring the possibilities, piecing together the fragments of evidence, and using our imaginations to fill in the gaps.
So, is there anything else we know about these companies of prophets? Were they always around? Or did they appear during a specific period?
That's another interesting detail. Vinoy points out that the term B'nai Hanabim, or sons of the prophets, it only shows up during a certain period in Israelite history.
Oh, really? When was that?
Roughly from the time of King Ahab to the reign of Jehu.
So sometime between the 10th and 9th centuries BCE?
That's right. Somewhere between 974 and 841 BCE, to be a bit more precise.
So they weren't a permanent fixture?
It seems not. It was more like a unique phenomenon that appeared during a specific era.
But why then? What was it about that time that gave rise to these communities?
Good question. And that's something scholars are still debating.
Ah, okay.
Some think it might have been a response to the political and religious chaos of that time. Others suggest it was part of a broader spiritual awakening or revival movement.
Like a surge in prophetic activity.
Possibly. It's like we're catching glimpses of a hidden world, a fascinating subculture within ancient Israelite society.
It's intriguing. But what does this tell us about prophesying itself? Does it suggest that prophetic experiences were more communal than we usually imagine?
That's a great observation. It definitely challenges that stereotype of the lone prophet receiving a solitary message.
Right.
These groups suggest that there was a collective dimension to prophecy, a sense of shared experience, shared spiritual energy.
So maybe it wasn't just about individual revelation, but about tapping into a collective spiritual consciousness, a connection with the divine. Access through group practices and rituals.
It's a fascinating idea, isn't it?
It is. It suggests that prophecy wasn't just about hearing God's voice, but about experiencing it in a really profound way, and maybe even amplifying that experience through group participation.
It makes you wonder if we see parallels in other spiritual traditions, where group practices or rituals are used for deeper spiritual experiences.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like Sufi whirling dervishes. Pentecostal worship services,
or
even group meditation.
Exactly.
So maybe those companies of prophets were tapping into something universal, a human desire to connect with the divine through collective experience and heightened emotion.
That's a compelling thought. It suggests that even though the forms and expressions may vary, the underlying impulse is the same, the desire to connect with something transcendent, to experience the divine in a tangible way. It resonates with us all on a deep level.
It really makes you rethink the whole idea of prophecy. Doesn't it? It's not just about individuals receiving messages, but about these communal experiences, these spiritual practices, and this really deep human desire to connect with something bigger than ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a key takeaway from looking at prophets and prophecy in ancient Israel. It expands our understanding of how God might have interacted with people, not just through individuals, but through groups, through whole communities.
We've covered so much ground in this deep dive. We started with how prophets knew they were speaking God's words, not just their own thoughts. We looked at Nathan and David, Samuel and Eliab, even Jonah trying to run away from his mission.
Right.
And we talked about Jeremiah and Hananiah, that really traumatic confrontation, and how those events show how crucial it was to be able to tell true prophets from false ones.
Yeah, that was a big one. And then we went into those fascinating companies of prophets,
right,
exploring all those different theories about what we were doing, what their purpose was. It's amazing how much we still don't know about these groups, even now.
Yeah, it is. But the glimpses we do have, they offer some really valuable insights into the diversity and complexity of ancient Israelite religion.
Definitely.
I have to admit, I still have a ton of questions. But I guess that's not always a bad thing, right?
No, not at all. It's more like a spark, you know?
Yeah.
It ignites more curiosity, a desire to keep learning.
So where do we go from here? If our listener wants to keep exploring the world of prophets and prophecy, both in the ancient context and in their own lives, what should they do? What advice would you give them?
Well, first thing first, I always recommend going back to the source. Read those biblical texts themselves.
Okay.
Especially the books of Samuel, Kings, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel. That's where you'll find a lot of those famous prophet stories. Don't just rely on summaries or interpretations. Really immerse yourself in the actual narratives. Pay attention to the language. Let the stories speak for themselves.
So become a textual detective.
Exactly. Examine the evidence. Put the clues together and draw your own conclusions.
Love it. And as you're reading, what should our listener be thinking about? What kinds of questions should they be asking?
Ask yourself what stands out to you. What parts resonate? What parts challenge your assumptions? What sparks your curiosity? Those questions, they can lead you down some really interesting paths.
And what if our listener wants to go beyond the biblical text? Are there other good resources out there? Like books or articles?
Oh, absolutely. There are tons of scholarly works on prophecy, covering everything from historical and theological angles to literary, even psychological interpretations. Don't be afraid to explore those different viewpoints.
So books, articles, maybe even other podcasts.
For sure. And don't just stick to scholarly stuff. There are some really insightful books and essays written from a more personal or spiritual perspective. The main thing is to be open to different ways of understanding, different ways of engaging with this material.
It's like we're building this multifaceted understanding, a tapestry woven from different sources and perspectives.
I like that. That's a great image. And it's really important when we're dealing with something as complex and nuanced as prophecy. There's no one right answer, no single definitive interpretation. It's a journey, an exploration. And the more viewpoints you consider, the richer your understanding will become.
Speaking of journeys, we've talked a lot about prophecy in the ancient world. But what about prophecy today? Is it still relevant? Or is it just something from the past?
That's a question a lot of people wrestle with. And honestly, I think that while the specific forms might be different, the core of prophecy, that idea that God can communicate with us, that we can get guidance and inspiration from something beyond ourselves, I think that's just as relevant now as it ever was.
So it's not just about predicting the future or giving warnings. It's more about being open to that deeper connection with the divine, a sense of guidance and purpose that can shape our lives and our actions right now.
Exactly. And I think that's where some of the most important lessons from the prophets are found. It's not just about the historical events or the specific things they said. It's about those core principles, those underlying themes, faith, courage, integrity, and that willingness to really listen and respond to a call that might be bigger than ourselves.
It's like they're holding a mirror up to our own lives.
Yeah.
Challenging us to look at our motivations, our values, and ask ourselves, are we willing to be instruments of good? Are we living up to our potential?
That's a powerful way to put it, and I think that's a great way to frame our final thoughts for our listener.
If we were to sum up all of this into a few takeaways, what would you say are the most important things to remember about prophets and prophecy? What's the lasting message, the stuff we should really take with us from this deep dive?
Well, first off, I think it's crucial to remember that prophets were real people, dealing with some really complex experiences. They weren't perfect, they messed up, and they often faced huge challenges, a lot of opposition, in trying to do what they believed they were called to do. Their stories show us that faith isn't about having all the answers. It's about being willing to step into the unknown, to wrestle with tough questions, and to trust in a power that's bigger than ourselves.
It's about the journey itself.
Yeah.
The searching, the questioning, and having the courage to speak truth to power, even when it's hard, even when it's unpopular.
Exactly. And the second thing I'd say is that the prophets' stories, they push us to develop our own ability to discern.
Okay.
In a world where we're bombarded with information and with so many different voices, it's so important to be able to separate truth from lies, to recognize genuine inspiration versus manipulation.
So it's about developing our own internal BF detector.
Haha, exactly. Learning to see the signs of real authenticity, integrity, and a true connection to something divine. And finally, I think the biggest legacy of the prophets is that message of hope, of possibility. Their stories show us that God can speak through anyone. It doesn't matter what your background is, your social status, or your flaws.
It's a reminder that we don't have to be perfect to be used by God.
Exactly. It's about being willing to listen, to respond, and to act on what we believe to be true. That's what makes all the difference.
That's beautiful put. And I think that's a perfect place to wrap up this part of our conversation.
Sounds good to me.
David was a shepherd, right, before he became king.
Yeah, and a lot of the prophets, they didn't come from positions of power either.
It's encouraging.
It is. It shows that anyone has the potential, you know, to be used by God for good, to make a difference, to play a part in something bigger.
It's not about having it all figured out. It's about being willing to listen and respond and to act on what we believe.
Beautifully said. I think that's a really great point to end on. Those prophets, they might seem so far removed from us, living in a totally different time and place, but their struggles, the things they learned, their commitment to the truth, those things still resonate with us today. You know, they offer guidance, they inspire us on our own journeys of faith. They remind us to listen deeply, to be honest and brave, to live with courage, knowing that we can be a part of God's plan too.
Wow, it's been an amazing journey exploring this whole world of prophets and prophecy with you.
It has.
You've given our listener a lot to think about.
I hope so.
And maybe they'll even hear a prophetic whisper or two along the way.
I wouldn't be surprised. And remember, the most important discoveries are often the ones we make within ourselves. So keep searching, keep listening, and stay open to the possibilities.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, keep exploring, keep those questions coming, and keep the conversation going.